Often you find that when you go away, you really hear from the Lord, don't you? It's like you're out of the game. You know, you've got some time. You feel a bit more rested. The daily calendar looks a lot different, and you come back with a really fired up and a word from the Lord to deliver. Well, that didn't happen to me. I'm sorry to disappoint. I kind of switched off and I didn't manage to turn the on button again. But I'm not worried because I've been sharing openly as I try to do. I'm just trying to open my Bible here. I've been sharing openly with people, like, I haven't really got a word for the Lord, you know, because we're stepping into a new season. And often you hear, like, preachers and churches say, this is going to be the year of something. This is going to be the year of, I'm not really sure. Something. Absolutely something. But I have been encouraged when I've been speaking to people and say, well, I don't want to just make something up, because that wouldn't be doing the Lord any justice. But the thing that has been reflected back to me by several people is maybe we just need to continue to pursue in what God has given us for today. And that really encouraged me, because we are on a journey. We are progressing through different stages of spiritual growth, of readjusting how we look as a church body, how we interact with our friends and partners and people on Buttershaw. And that has been growing steadily. I can confirm this because I've booked in a meeting in September with other church partners to talk about Christmas. I know. How organized am I? Yeah, scarily. And I do believe that God has given us enough to chew on and digest and still work in. So I'm sorry if you're expecting a massive word this morning of this is the year of. It may come, and it may not come from me. Well, hopefully it wouldn't come from me. It comes from God. But let's just be thankful that God is working within our midst. I know it may not always feel like that, but things are looking very different. If we just think back to how things were a year ago and where we are now, and how much we've already achieved and participated in, it does encourage me. So, on that note, let me pray and then we'll get into the word. Everlasting God, the God of the universe, the God who created all things to give him glory. As we open up the word this morning, may the glory of God just resound from our hearts. Let the essence of joy and thankfulness be our companion today. For your glory, for your kingdom, and for your son's sake. Amen. So, I've been thinking about mission, because we're all on a mission. Although we are many people, we are called to a personal mission. Now, that might seem very genetic, but it's very personal as well. Now, I've been looking at a word, monotheism, put your teeth back in, monotheism, which basically means one God. There is one God, one creator God, who is involved with his creation. He comes into creation. And this was very much highlighted when he sent Jesus into the world so we would be sent out to the world. That's the basic principle of monotheism. A loving God a creator God who is involved with the world, with his people. And you can't get any more involved than sending your only son into the world and living a life that we live. But obviously how Jesus made that different, he emptied himself of his glory and became fully human, but at the same time, he still retained being God, the character of God. And this is what we're all working towards, being more God-like, reflecting his character, which is good, it's safe, and it's life-changing. But obviously, if I just stop there, I'm kind of missing out big chunks, because when Jesus came into the world, he called people to him. Primarily, he called his disciples, and he invested in them, and he sent them out. And then they came back to him. And then Jesus sent out the 70, where he sent them out. And then they came back to him. But the time came when Jesus was going to leave the world. But he didn't leave us empty. Because he said, I must go to make way for the Spirit to come. So Jesus went back up into heaven, and then 40 days later, the Spirit came, and that's when we went out. Sorry, anyone who knows where that's leading. We didn't just go out, we went out. We went on a mission where the world started to look a lot different because the Spirit of the living God was very much present in them early Christians. And the word spread. And that's what we're called to do, is to spread the word, to go out and share our faith with those that God has called us to minister to. And I think we are doing this more and more. And for us, it looks different for different people. Because when we say the world, your world might be Buttershaw for this time. Your world might be your family. Your world might be your friends or the people that you work with. Or your world might be split between two worlds. You might have your ministry at home, but also you're called to other countries to go and preach the word. We celebrated the Sitches coming back from Peru, where they went to share God's love and bring testament back to us of what God is doing in the nations. We're encouraged that Gary is going to Brazil to do exactly the same. To go out to the nations and minister what God has given him into different parts. And see the living God who gets involved with his creation in different areas. And bring something back. And I'm hoping more and more of us will feel the challenge and the calling to go further than where we are at the moment. But not forgetting your primary calling. It's where you are. It's where has God has placed you now is where you are. And he's ministering through you, but also to you. You may not always choose where God places you. You may actually get really excited about the calling of God and respond to it and move in a different area, but things may quickly look difficult or become difficult. But God has not forgot you. God does not put the mission over his care for you. And that's the message this morning. That we have a God who cares about the whole world, and he's given us his power to go out and preach that good news, to bring glory to the living God who's impacted and changed our lives, but not at the expense of your well-being. He loves and cares for you. And to help unpack this, I'm going to look at Jonah this morning. Oh, I think kind of gets a bad press. What things do you know about the story of Jonah? Hands up. Thank you, Liz. He was a reluctant servant of God. He liked the idea of the Tarshish life. It must have been a very nice place to be. Anything else? He got eaten by a fish. Correct. Grace. Who? Hang on a minute. Grace. Round of applause for Grace. Just to embarrass her. Who did really well in her exams. And we should celebrate all the young people, irrespective of how well or how underperformed they may have felt. But Grace really put in the effort, and she did really well. So well done, Grace. But now I've embarrassed you. Yes. Brilliant. So he didn't really want to go to Nineveh because he knew God was a gracious and good God and he'd probably save them. Anything else? He did. He did get very angry. Yes. And I'll be quoting what he said in a bit. Anything else? He didn't seem very happy, was he? Well, I mean, that's probably most of the things that we've been taught about Jonah. And I've often thought he was just a man who just ran away. But actually, if you actually spend time reading the story, he was a prophet. He was zealous for God. He loved God. He knew God. He interacted with God. He would be an outstanding Christian today. An outstanding representation of God. And it's easy to brush over that, but he was a godly man. He lived and served and loved the Lord. Greatly. Greatly. But God gave him a word one day and said, go to Nineveh. Go and give them my warning. Because what is happening there is not good. They are being wicked. They have turned away from my goodness. And I want to bring them back. And Jonah's reaction was like, really? You're going to send me there? Because he didn't like them. He knew what they were like. He was a God of God. He was a Hebrew. And anyone who wasn't a Hebrew was an enemy, really. Because they didn't love God. They were wicked. They didn't follow God's ways. But God said, no, I'm sending you. I'm sending you to the place that you probably least want to go. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Is God ever said to you, I want you to go and speak to that person? And you're like, God, I got a minute, God. You know, I really struggle with this person. I find it hard to be loving, God. And now you want me to go minister to him. Has anyone been in that position? A few of you. Or has God ever sent you to a place and you're like, no? To be honest, that's how I felt when I heard God was sending me to Bradford. I was like, no, who goes to Bradford? Seriously, God. I wanted to go to London. That's where it was at. Be metropolitan and go to the theatre and, you know, hang out in the ghetto with the boys and all that. But God had a different plan. He said, Bradford. Maz was on the other end. She was like, brilliant. Where is it? Didn't know. She just knew it was up north. But when God calls you to a place, you have a choice, don't you? You have a choice whether to be obedient to that or not. And Jonah made his choice pretty quickly. He was like, no, God, I'm off. To Tarshish! So he boarded a boat. He paid money. And it actually says he actually interacted with the crew and told them, I'm on the run. I just want to get to Tarshish. I want to get as far away from Nineveh as possible. I'm kind of ad-libbing here, but it does suggest this in the scriptures. And then the story goes, he's on the boat, they're sailing away. And then the waves hit, and a storm brews, and a panic is overridden within the boat. That's not even a word, but there we are. And where do you find Jonah? So they're throwing, the crew's going round crazy saying, what is going on? This storm's come out of nowhere. It must be something that we've done or something that someone has done on this boat. Why are we in this storm? Why? And they're throwing things out and they're trying to solve it in their own hands, trying to do it the human way. Let's empty it out. It must be this. So if we throw this out and get rid of that, we're going to get through this. But that didn't happen. They lightened the boat. They got rid of the cargo. But the waves were still crashing. And where do you find Jonah? Asleep. Slapping. Sparkle. And I've really never noticed this before because I've always concentrated on the negative side. But when do we hear a similar story within the Bible like that? Jesus on the boat. Whatever you may think about Jonah in that moment and his decision, he still had the peace of the Lord. He still had a relationship with God. He still loved God, and God definitely loved Jonah. And although there was a panic in the waves of life being thrown at these people and this ship, you will find Jonah in a deep sleep. And I think that alludes to his peace of God. It really does. But Jonah had gone below deck where he lay down and he fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us so that we will not perish. So here's the situation. The storm is hitting. They try to do the human thing and throw things out to solve the problem. But they realize the problem was not going away. So they get to the point saying, dragging Jonah out of this deep sleep and saying, pray, call on your God. Then maybe we will get through this. We will not perish. So after that, there was a conversation that ensued. And basically, Jonah came utterly clean. He said to them, pick me up and throw me out of the boat. Pick me up and toss me into the sea. Because my faith in God was saying that because I've been disobedient, at least I can acknowledge that, but I might be able to save you guys. He was willing to lay his life down for those that were around him. And sometimes we find ourselves in situations in our life where we have to give things up for the benefit of others. That we have to sacrifice something in our life for the health and safety of others. I went to see Jason this week, and he's doing remarkably well. I was so encouraged by his attitude. But I was equally encouraged by what he was saying about you guys and how much he appreciated the time you had sacrificed to go and be with him. But also for those that he knows are praying for him. But these things come at a cost. And I think this story highlights the cost of the calling. Whether you're obedient to God or not, he's placed his spirit not just upon you, but within you. And even though I know we all make mistakes, I know that the heartbeat of every single person in this building is the goodwill and health of those that are around them. Whether that be their immediate family, but also for those that God has called them to minister to. And I want to recognize that this morning and speak it out, that we are living a sacrificial life, that God has asked us to give things up, and that's hard. So the people of the crew on the ship have a choice, and they try desperately to do everything they can not to throw Jonah out. But they get to the point where they're just utterly desperate. And they ask the living God to have mercy on them for what they're about to do. But at the request of Jonah. So they pick him up and they toss him into the sea. Almost like, not skimmed him. Sorry about that. I went to Burnsall yesterday and I was skimming stone, so maybe that's... But they threw him into the sea, and immediately the sea calmed. And their response was brilliant, because they praised God. They sacrificed themselves. Not just recognizing the sacrifice of Jonah, but they actually made sin offerings to God. And I think that can be overlooked. That the sacrifice and the pain and the hard choices that you make and the consequences of that for you may be very hard, but the blessings you leave behind, you just don't know. Did Jonah know? It says it here, and this is part of the story. I don't know if Jonah met back up with them. I don't want to presume that. But let's recognize that through the hard choice and Jonah's obedience to God and his willingness to sacrifice himself for the well-being of others, actually what came out of that was life on that boat. Not just their physical life, but their spiritual life. And he's in the sea. And he's dropping down. But it says the Lord did not forget him. The Lord has sent a fish. And he was swallowed up, consumed by this fish, where he spent 3 days and three nights. And when he was in the fish, he prayed. He was honest with God. But he repented. He repented. He turned away, knowing that God had put something on his heart, give him a specific message. And God sent the fish, and spat him out in the direction that he should have been going all along. I don't know where you're at, but sometimes when we call to ministry, it can feel like it can just swallow you up. You're just swallowed up by it. You feel trapped. It feels overwhelming. That although you know you've been called to something, it just gets too big or too much. And you just feel consumed and swallowed. I think that's something we need to recognize as a church. To keep an eye on each other. Because we've all been called to different ministries. But together we collectively make the ministry of God of preaching his good news to people at the top. But we need to check in with each other and make sure that you're not swallowed up. That things haven't got too much. That we're not just drifting in the belly of the fish in a direction. Maybe where we should be going, but that sense of isolation. God has given his spirit, but he's given us each other. To stand with each other. To listen. To pray. To intervene. To support and love. And most importantly, feed. Spiritually feed. But we do a very good number second feed as well. So here he is. And again, the Lord has spoken to him. And he said the same thing that he said in the beginning. Go to Nineveh. Go and preach my message to them. Go into the city. So he did. It says that the city was massive. It would take 3 days to get from one side to the other. Big city. One man. One mission. One message. Over 120,000 people. One man. One mission. One message. If I said to you, I feel God has called you, just you, to go out into Bradford with one message from the Lord, what would you think? Scary. It's scary. How can one person with one message, no social media, not like you can Facebook and tweet and send adverts out and get posters and flick them around. One person. One word, one mission. But he did. He went in. And he started at the beginning. And he started to speak to the local people. And the people heard and responded. Then the local people would have got to the authorities. And the authorities heard. And they responded. And then from the authorities, it went up to the king. And the king's response is mind-blowing. He's mind-blowing. Because he orders a fast, a city-wide fast, where not even the animals should eat. He put on sackcloth for a king to derobe himself. Must have been quite humiliating, but to wear sackcloth and throw ash on your head and look like everyone else is amazing. They stood together and they received the one word, the one mission from the one person, and the city was saved. The city was saved. One word, one person, one mission. But where did that leave Jonah? Was he amazed and overawed by God's splendor and ability to use one word, one mission, and one person to save a city? No, he didn't. He stomped out, made himself a shelter. And look back at the city to see what would happen. And he was angry. He was angry with God. And he said, to God. I knew this would happen. I knew it. You're so good and gracious. Yeah. He was acting like a little child. I knew it. This is why I didn't want to go, God. Because I knew that you would save them. But that went against my beliefs. I don't think they deserved it. I think you should have struck them down. Wipe them out. Good riddance. I'm a Hebrew. I live for you, God. I love you, God. Where's the love of God in that city? Where is the glory of God rising up from those people? Get rid of them. Easy. Let's be honest. Have we said that ourselves? About the government? Maybe people that we work with. Sort them out, God. Deal with them. I don't want to. You deal with them. You teach them. You show them how wicked they are. You punish them because that's what they deserve. Let's not be ignorant of our own selfish motives sometimes. That God will put us in situations that will bring conflict to our thought patterns. I faced them many times just here in Buttershaw, where those I thought I was helping and invested a lot of my time and effort and resources have turned back on me and bit me hard. I've got angry about that. I've got upset. And some of you might think, yeah, well, fair enough, you know. You've given your time. You've nurtured. You've invested. And then they turn around and they've bitten your head off and basically dismissed any good that you've tried to do. Does that mean I wasn't being obedient to God? Does that mean that God was wrong? It doesn't fit that kind of statement, does it? God is not wrong. So if God is not wrong and what I did was not wrong, then I'm holding something inside that is wrong. I'm holding on to myself. Because if I'm being obedient to God, and God didn't say people will love you or like you for it. In fact, he says the opposite. He said, because you love me, they will hate you. People will hate you. Family members will turn against you. Brothers will be pitted against brothers. Disowned by families because of me. And I forget these things in the moment. I think Jonah forgot. Because he was holding on to his own sinful nature. And God wanted to prize it out. Because the most important thing about this message is that God could have sent anyone to Nineveh, but he chose Jonah. Did God know that Jonah would rebel? He had his own prejudice against the people of Nineveh? Yes, he did. He could have sent anyone. And I want to be reluctant and say he persevered with Jonah. God didn't persevere with Jonah. God loved Jonah. And he loved him so much that he taught him through them hard times and highlighted some of the things that God wanted to take away from Jonah. It says, but God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about this plant? Because he was in a shelter, and because God is a loving God, he made this plant grow to bring him shade and comfort. And Jonah was pleased about it as he sat grumpily looking at Nineveh, waiting for the fire and brimstones to come down. And then God took away the plant. God uses things like this to teach us, to nurture us, to prize these things out of us. Not because he's a horrible God, but he cares so deeply about people. He cares deeply about you. And he will never allow his mission, his word, to make you a victim of it. It may be hard and bring you under pressure, but God will use that to show his love and kindness to you. He will teach you, and he's molding you through those situations. But let's not be ignorant that it is hard to accept when these things that we're holding on to because of life experiences or maybe what we've been taught growing up or in churches, that will bring conflict to our soul. Jonah said to God's response, "Is it right for you to be angry?" He said, "I am so angry. I wish I was dead." Sounds like a teenager. "Dad." It was quite funny on holiday. I hope Judah's not listening now. But we took him to a supermarket. And Judah suffers from high metabolism. So he gets hungry really quickly. And when he's hungry, he just loses all sense of reality, and his legs usually go like this. And we're in this supermarket, and it's in France. It's all a bit stressful. And he's like, "I'm hungry, you're hungry." And we try to explain to him, "We know you're hungry, but we're in a supermarket to buy you food, to feed your hunger." And his response was, "What's more important, buying things or giving me something to eat? You're making me die. Die. Please give me something to eat." But we couldn't get through to him. "We want to feed you. We want you to be nourished. But we have to buy things. We have to buy them so we can fill your little tummy and then you can go skipping off away from death." I know that sounds extreme, but Jonah was like this, wasn't he? "I want to die. Oh, you're not feeding me. You're not giving me what I want in the order that I want it." And God says, "No. I love you. I'm providing for you. But part of my love and providing, it means that there has to be an order to things. So you learn the lesson. That you get to receive not just the nourishment of the moment, but the knowledge and the life-changing impact of that experience. That you won't fall into this trap anymore. We need to be a people that recognize that sometimes we fall into a trap and we do throw wobblers. And that's okay. God can handle that. God can handle it. But he won't ignore it. He will use them situations, as tough as they may be, and he'll bring order to it. And he'll bring life to your soul. And he'll place you back on that rock and say, "You are my son. You are my daughter. I see your pain. I hear your frustration. And I'm not just going to fix the situation. I'm actually going to fix you. Because you are more important. You are worth more than just the mission." Is the things in your life that are causing you pain at the moment? Is the things in your world where you just want it to go away? It's like, "God, just take it away. Just sort it out. Just do it." And this is what God's saying to you this morning is, "I hear your pain. I feel but we're going to walk through this together for your benefit and for my glory. It may not be what you want to hear, but it's what you need to hear. God has called each and every one of you to Buttershaw. You're not here by mistake. None of us are. And he's called us collectively to preach the good news of God. But I know also he's giving you something personally, each and every one of you, because the Spirit of the living God is in you. And he's moving in you. And he wants to release you into that ministry, whether that's praying for people on the streets or being generous at work or bringing sense of wisdom and loyalty to people or educating people or just being the rock where others seem to be a place of water of movement that people can place their trust in you. Whatever God has called you to do, do it with all your heart, mind, body and soul. But also let's not forget that God cares about you as a person, that you will not be crushed. And you may find yourselves on choppy waves, but be obedient to God. You may find yourself swallowed up by what God has called you to do, but be repentant and recognize the word of God. You may find yourselves in a place of anger and frustration, but be open to God's mercy. For us to really achieve all that God has achieved, I firmly believe that we need to be mindful of these three things. That it isn't hard. It is hard. And it does come at a cost of sacrifice. But we're not alone. We have each other. Let's encourage each other. Let's look out for that anointing. Let's cover each other in prayer. Let's celebrate everything that God is doing and has done. Let's recognize that when some people are swallowed up because of just the amount of what is on their plate, let's gather around them. Because if we can encourage each other, how much more can we do for those that haven't yet received that life-giving Spirit? So in a minute, we're going to be taking communion, where we commune together as a body, remembering Jesus' body that was broken, remembering his sacrifice by sharing the wine. But most importantly, remembering that Jesus, God, who came into the world so we could go out, isn't asking us to do something that he hasn't. Let us pray.